This week we're heading to a native food garden where we'll meet a passionate advocate of Indigenous bush foods. He's on a mission to get more Australians eating plants like the Warrigal greens, lemon myrtle and river mint. We'll find out about plans for a bush tucker farm in central Victoria and meet the young Indigenous gardeners who'll be tending the farm and selling its produce to local restaurants and at farmers markets. And talk about a career change, we're catching up with a pilot who's made the switch from cockpit to working the coffee machine in a country cafe.
I used to push buttons and coffee would arrive into the flight deck. Now I have to push buttons and make coffees. Something I've done for the last 25 or so years is just fly. To then have a complete change of career direction was very difficult for me. But you just believe in yourself and realise that anything's possible.
How the coronavirus pandemic led an international airline pilot to running a cafe in a small mountaintop village in rural New South Wales. That story coming up, but first today, there's not many sporting clubs where being in your 80s make you one of the youngsters. At the South Tweed Table Tennis Club in northern New South Wales, the club secretary is 99 years old and the oldest club member is 100. Cathy Border has the story.
Everyone gets along and it's a very friendly club and everyone looks out for everyone else, so it's very good.
You have a lot of older members who are really sprightly playing table tennis.
Well, I believe table tennis is really good for you as you get older because you use both sides of your brain, left and right, and for your reflexes and all that sort of thing.
Hello, I'm Cathy Border and welcome to the South Tweed Heads Table Tennis Club in northern New South Wales. Club Treasurer Elspeth Sherwood is one of the whippersnappers of the club. Meet the secretary.
Cecil Shaw, 99. I've been playing since 1940. It just, it was there. And we played on the dining room table at home, everybody did. Just for fun, and I liked it. My records are all behind me now. I represented Queensland in the Interstate Series for 6-7 years in a row, from 1950 to 1956. That's all states. You're going to the states. In 1955, I won the open doubles with my partner.
In the Australian titles? Well done, you.
Yeah. And then in 2007, I won with my partner in the Talavajra, the over 75 Australian veterans doubles.
It's game on, 99-year-old Cess paddling up against 100-year-old Teddy.
They're friendly, they're very friendly. I don't like the turtles, like they're sitting. I like movement, you know what I mean? And like, nice girls like you, which way, this way, I got a lot of them.
So there are fringe benefits to playing table tennis, are there?
Well, I like dancing too, you see.
What's your competition like here?
Well, I'm the top. I'm the, what do you call it, number one.
Have and you got a female partner that you play with?
Unfortunately, I don't. And I'm looking for another girl, but I can't find it.
Teddy may just get his wish. Four of his fellow players have found love, like Jim and Gloria.
Just someone was a bit lonely and it was suggested that I give him a ring. And so one Easter weekend I rang him up and said, would you like to come in for tea? So he said yes.
That was the start of it.
What a lovely way to meet, starting off as friends.
Yes.
Well, he was a bit unhappy with the loss of his wife and earlier, so that's just where it just one thing leads to another. And I'd lost my previous husband about 8 years ago.
How lovely, but table tennis is still a big part of your life?
Oh, very much so, yes. We play 3 or 4 times a week and also at home.
So do you really?
We do, yeah.
Who's the better player?
He is.
President and chief matchmaker is Nolene Torres.
We've got 60 members now.
That's a good membership base.
It is a good membership, yes, especially considering the age.
What are the ages of your members?
The youngest one is 60 and the oldest one is 100. And we've got all ages in between, mostly in their 70s. And they all love table tennis and they all keep fit and young, young at heart. It's great.
Well, here in the room today, you've got 4 people aged over 90. That's impressive.
We have, yes. Yes, it's amazing.
Is there something in the water at this club?
Possibly. possibly, yes. I think most of it is probably the companionship, you know, getting together and sharing stories and having a laugh. And sometimes we have a lunch upstairs together and we have a Christmas party where everybody comes, perhaps not this year. But yes, we just have a great, it's a family really.
But that friendship's developed into a little bit more for some of your members.
Well, it has actually, yes, you're right. We could perhaps class ourselves as second as a dating agency because we've had two lots of couples that have met here. Gina and Fred, they met here and they've partnered up, and also Gloria and Jim. Jim lost his wife Christmas Day or New Year's Day, and then a couple of years later him and Gloria got friendly and they partnered up as well.
It's lovely, isn't
it? It is lovely, yes, yes.
Although Teddy's making it very clear to everyone that he's on the market and available.
Oh, Teddy's got his harem here, he's fine.
It's a busy Sunday afternoon in a rustic cafe in the mountaintop village of Comboyne, west of Port Macquarie in the mid-north coast region of New South Wales. Behind the coffee machine, Dave Everingham is concentrating on the task at hand. It's a long way from his comfort zone.
I used to push buttons and coffee would arrive into the flight deck. Now I have to push buttons and make coffees.
A few months ago, he was regularly doing the Hong Kong run from Sydney as a pilot for Virgin Australia, spending his free time at a property he owns at Comboyne. He was one of thousands left without work when international flights ground to a halt because of the coronavirus pandemic. He was officially made redundant in October and says it was hard handing in the uniform.
Very difficult, actually, because I was one of those fortunate people that when the alarm went off to go to work, I would bounce out of bed and go, I love my job, I love going to work. I loved my time off, but I also loved being a pilot and going to work.
So nachos, yeah. I've got the nachos, you got the fried chips and gravy?
Yep. And
then
two more nachos.
And then two more nachos. Busy.
Hello, I'm Emma Siossian. I'm watching on as Dave works to get food to hungry diners during a busy lunchtime. This is how he spends his days now, after taking a leap of faith and embarking on a total change of career direction, opening this cafe at Comboyne.
Change of life for me, going from international airline pilot to coffee shop owner, runner. Yeah, many challenges, you know, convincing people that it was going to be successful was one of the hardest challenges. Everyone thought that I was just bonkers starting a coffee shop during COVID times. Trying to get some funding to buy the equipment was difficult. Yeah, just convincing myself, I think, too, that I would be able to do it. Something I've done for the last 25 or so years is just fly, and to then have a complete change of career direction was very difficult for me. But you just believe in yourself and realise that anything's possible.
Within 20 seconds on the muffin?
Yeah, 20, yeah.
I know where she's. Dave's partner, Deborah Garner, is helping run the cafe and has also had to make some huge life adjustments. She's been stood down on leave without pay from her job as a Virgin Australia cabin supervisor. She's since started a nursing degree and regularly commutes between Comboyne and Sydney, where she lives with her children.
Hey guys! So previously I was doing international long-haul flying with Virgin Australia, but before the pandemic hit, I transferred back to the domestic, but I actually never flew, so I haven't flown since March. Since then, stood down on leave without pay. I'm now studying nursing in Sydney and running a coffee shop with Dave in Comboyne.
And how has all the reinvention been going?
It's been unexpected, but staying positive. And that's the most important thing, stay positive, that we've actually tried. I mean, Dave doing the coffee shop is amazing, such a difference to what he's doing. But it's flying and being served coffee to now serving coffee. And it's one of our standing jokes now. It's tough and it's challenging, but you've got to stay positive.
It's now been 4 months since the cafe opened, and judging by the steady flow of people through the doors on a sunny Sunday afternoon, things are continuing to go well.
Comboyne's a great community, very supportive, and I think they've seen and realised that it's good for the town.
It's beyond our expectations. The other restaurant shut down. There was no coffee in Comboyne, and it's become our slogan, coffee in Comboyne now. And it was going to be a little coffee shop serving tea and cakes, and it's just escalated. The reception of not just the community, but people come from far away to see us. And it's good coffee, as you know.
Yeah, I do.
And the food's good, the quality's good. And it's just, it's so nice just chatting to people, and they know you, and it's, yeah, it's a really good.
Both Dave and Deb haven't ruled out returning to their airline careers at some stage in the future. But for now, locals at Comboyne are hoping they'll stick around for a while.
There's something for the locals to get together and socialise, as we are some distance from town. So it, there was three cafes here, and before Dave opened up, there was none. So it's been great for the community to... And also the community, I think, are keen to support someone that's having a making an effort. And he's done such a great job too. He's the food's terrific, the coffee's great, the venue's well utilised.
Yeah, well, we opened on the 11th of July this year, right in the heart of the pandemic. And it's surprised me, it really has surprised me how well it's gone. It's just getting busier and busier, and we're really excited about it. And yeah, it continues to grow.
Former pilot Dave Everingham, who's now running a cafe in the small mountain town of Comboyne on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. You can read more about Dave's big career change on our website. Head to abc.net.au/rn and find A Country Breakfast under the Programs tab. I'm Edwina Farley. Still to come, we're getting an introduction to foods that have been growing in Australia for thousands of years that you've probably never tasted or even heard of. And we'll meet some Aboriginal elders who are hoping to change that. They're passionate about growing native foods and raising awareness of their flavour and nutritional qualities, and they're passing on their knowledge to the next generation.
So here we've got a finger lime. This is a green finger lime.
So is this it flowering, or is this the...
Yeah, it all it's flowering, and then the flowers, of course, will turn into the limes. Yeah. So.
Auntie Julie McHale has been interested in native plants and botanicals for decades, and she's been growing bush tucker here in central Victoria for about 15 years.
When I retired from teaching, I was already interested in using some of the ingredients, the ones that everybody uses, you know, like your lemon myrtle, your mountain pepper and things like that. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll have a go at growing some of them. So then I started exploring other options. So I've also got a couple of beds where there's what I call the underground gastronomy growing in it. Now I think I've got about 90 different varieties of bush tucker food from all over Australia.
She's now the driving force behind plans to develop an Indigenous bush tucker farm near the town of Harcourt. The farm has secured state government funding, and it's hoped it will grow to be a commercially viable operation, employing young Indigenous people.
I have worked with Aboriginal children and youth for decades, and I sort of get a little bit sick of seeing a lot of our kids going into traineeships that lead to nowhere. So I thought this would be an ideal opportunity for the kids to sort of feel an ownership of something. So one of the aims is to employ only Aboriginal people, and preferably young Aboriginal people.
Hello, I'm Eden Henninen, and I'm here with Auntie Julie, and I'm meeting some of the young people she's recruited to the project.
My name's Claire Barker. I'm a Gunditjmara person and have grown up and lived all my life on Jarjarung country. My father, Leighton Barker, has always encouraged me to be really proud of our ancestry, and he's always been really involved in education and that kind of thing. And I absolutely love food as well, so it was kind of the perfect meeting. Auntie Julie has taught me quite a lot over the last year and has really taken me under her wing, and I'm really appreciative for all of the knowledge that she's passing on.
And I hear that you're going to be the gardener at this site.
Yes, yes, it's very exciting. We've got an absolute goldmine of amazing foods and, you know, really nutritionally interesting foods, but most importantly, culturally significant. I know a lot of people talk about macadamia and wattle seed and lemon myrtle. They're definitely favourites, but there's so many different flavours and stories that come with the food in this area and all of Australia.
My name's Harley Douglas. I am of Jarrah descent. I am project manager at Jandak, which is the Jadjarung Enterprises. Auntie Julie asked me to manage this project. Auntie Julie actually taught me in grade one, so she's got some good investment, good return on her investment there.
Took a while.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to with this project?
I love the idea of using plants that aren't indigenous to this area. That's something that I think Jadjarung and other government organisations, they focus on EVCs, which is ecological vegetation communities, and they like to think that indigenous plants to this area should only stay in this area. But I think we need to broaden our scope there. And as you can see where we are right now, the plants do grow here. Auntie Julie found a way of doing that. So I think we need to tap into her as much as possible while we've still got her and get all these plants out on site.
And Auntie Julie, tell me a little about some of the botanicals and plants that you'll be planting and growing.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that we'll be growing outside on the farm, you know, just on the property. We're also putting up a big greenhouse where for propagating, but also for growing some of the tropical and subtropical plants. A big shade house for things that like to live in the shade, like your mountain peppers and things like that. We'll be growing leaves, so there'll be like your salt bushes, your myrtles, you know, mountain pepper, the whole heap of different plants where the leaves are used. But then we'll also be growing berries. So we've got a native raspberry that grows around here.
And so you'll be getting a lot of the youth to come out, help plant, grow, look after and yep. sell throughout the community. Yes. It's not just at farmers markets, but at restaurants and other areas.
Yeah. Yeah, we've also already had a massive amount of interest.
We're standing out in your yard and there's at least 20 plants that we can see here. Can you talk me through some of the ingredients or plants that you'll be using?
What we're looking at here, the English name for it is cherry bollard. The local name for it is palooch. And it's a bush that grows out in all the bush around here. And at this time of the year, they're fruiting. So this is what they look like on the tree.
There's some wonderful colours.
Aren't they gorgeous? They're you can eat. They say to wait until they're really dark red before you eat them, but I find they taste nice at any stage, and they will ripen off the plant as well.
Because there's some purple, yellow, green, all colours in there.
Yeah, they're
gorgeous. And what does it taste like?
They're actually really sweet.
Why is it important, do you think, for these students and people involved to learn about the history of this?
Well, it's all about culture. The best way for young Aboriginal people to survive is to learn about that culture and the cultural connections, and to be able to put them in a contemporary context.
What we've got here is actually the first nation food that we've actually been consuming for over 50,000 years, but unfortunately over the last 250 years a lot of this food has not been consumed by people within Australia, and now trying to introduce it back into the culinary cycle and back into the flavours that that normal people, I'll use the word normal, but just people that can actually consume it again and actually enjoy the actual flavours, but also not only the flavours but very much the health benefits of it.
Here in this garden in Orange in central west New South Wales, Gerald Power is surrounded by native plants that he grows and harvests to cook and highlight Indigenous food.
We've got roasted wattle seeds, we've got saltbush, lemon myrtle, the macadamia nuts, river mint, the warrigal plants.
As he points at different foods and the plants they've come from, he shares stories about the ingredients and people's reactions to them.
We've got the kangaroo paw, which the kangaroo paw was actually the first ingredient that made the first flour in the whole world. They thought Egypt did it, until they found a grinding stone, and when they actually carbon dated it, they couldn't believe it. They tested it again. But the Aboriginal people were the first people on this earth, not the Egyptians, to actually harvest actual seeds and make bread out of it. And that's the kangaroo paw, which you're looking at over there in the bench.
Hello, I'm Emma Rennie. I'm here with Gerald in this small community garden where he's teaching me about some of these native plants, like bush basil, curry myrtle and river mint. And he's also sharing with me a special drink made from lemon myrtle and ironbark honey.
The moment they smell it and they say, oh, and then they try it, and the flavour just goes to the next level, and that's when they just say, wow, that is the nicest drink I've had. And they usually consume a whole flask. They just don't stop.
Well, I promise not to drink your whole flask, but I'll have a little mouthful. It's beautiful. It's really sweet. I really love the honey in it, but it's, yeah, I get that lemony citrusiness as well.
Yeah.
While the lemon myrtle and honey mix is a favourite to drink, when it comes to Gerald's favourite native food to eat, well, that's a tough one.
That would be very difficult. I enjoy everything, actually. I suppose the food itself, I would have to say the Warrigal green. It's things that you can use in stews. I make Warrigal pestos out of it. It's just so diverse in relation to how you can use it. It's the close call for anything else coming second.
So the Warrigal green, it's like a leaf.
Warrigal green is a leaf. It was the first tasted by Joseph Smith when he got here to Australia in Botany Bay. And that was the very first leaf that he actually tried. Well, then when he tested it, he found it was high in vitamin C, which actually encapsulated the challenge of the first colonisers, that the biggest detriment to that these 6 to 8 months was scurvy. They needed a high vitamin C. Just so happens that plant had a high vitamin C, so they took it all the way back to England, propagated, so every time a ship left the English shore or left Australian shores, they had to have that one plant, and it is something that we are not consuming enough.
Aside from sharing and promoting Indigenous food, one of Gerald's big aims is to offer employment and education for young local Aboriginal people.
I was mentored. I was brought up by my grandparents. I had uncles and aunties that cared for me, loved me and nurtured me, gave me the education. When I moved to Orange too, the elders actually took me under the arm, shared me a lot of the stories. So it's now passing on, and it's about that continuously generational aspect of passing on stories. It's always been part of our culture that we should share our stories as we've gotten on to a point.
So the leaves are edible, so you are welcome to take one, have a smell and then a taste, and then tell me kind of what flavours you're smelling and tasting, I guess.
So this is the river mint, you said?
Yeah.
If I eat this little leaf, I get the mint at the start. And I have a mouthful of leaf, but I get the mint at the start. What happens then?
So yeah, you have the minty taste at the start. It's a little bit subtle, and then towards the back end it is more stronger and peppery, so it does have a much stronger taste, and when it goes down you can really taste the kind of peppermint coming out of it.
Yeah, I did get that kick of pepper as you were talking.
My name's Erin Naden. I'm 19 years old and from the Wiradjuri Nation. So finishing school last year, I didn't have too much to do, and we've known Gerald for quite a while, so my mum messaged to see if he's had any work going on, and he was happy to take me on board. And since maybe about November last year, just been working closely with him, doing food markets, tours around the garden, and taking this stuff into the schools as well.
What would be your favourite thing to eat?
Out of everything, I'd probably go the crocodile, just because it's marinated in some lemon myrtle and then on top of some coleslaw with the Warrigal. I think it tastes quite good.
Well, I don't know if that's one thing. I feel like you're pulling together a lot of different ingredients there, but that's a really cool idea that you can make a whole meal out of, you know, the sort of food that you're cultivating here and other native ingredients.
Yeah, a lot of our food that we have, we do utilise a lot of different things and make kind of a meal out of it, like you said.
Increasingly, Gerald has been taking his native food education program into local schools. He's teaching the kids what Indigenous foods are and how they can be eaten. But he's also helping the schools to set up their own gardens so the students can grow their own food.
The kids, they just can't get enough of it. The stories in Blaney we were supposed to only do a couple of classes, and then they kept us in Blaney for the whole day. 160 children went through. The parents could not get them to eat their greens, and here they are coming out with saying that they're eating river mint, lemon myrtle, Warrigal, and loving their greens. And the parents are coming, and they won't eat any of the greens that we're putting on their thing, but they will eat that food. So it's a good thing that we're moving into the schools, and we're producing and presenting and teaching them how to utilise this stuff. So getting within those schools there and actually getting them to grow the plants in their garden, and we're teaching them how to harvest it and how to put it on the platter in the actual canteens.
Gerald sees a lot of potential for Indigenous food and says he's even getting requests to start up a restaurant, as big an undertaking as that would be. But ultimately, he hopes more people learn and get the courage to start incorporating Indigenous food into their own diets.
We have every cuisine restaurant, but when it comes to Indigenous food restaurant, that's where we haven't yet built that market. So yeah, the future looks really good. I'd really like to see every garden at the back of the house actually have a garden of Indigenous food mixed with the other food too, because you combine these ingredients and it just takes it to another level.
Emma Rennie brought us that story from Central West New South Wales, and before that, Eden Heinonen introduced us to Auntie Julie McHale, who's the driving force behind a bush tucker farm in central Victoria.